Noah, then at Avalanches right here on 720 WGN. Hannah Stanley in today.
Hey, Rob.
Hello, Hannah. Why do you have to say that? We're in the studio. You've already said hello to me.
I like saying hello to you.
A.B. Stoddard is joining us. She is from Real Clear Politics. And A.B., I'm sorry you had to be here for that. All right, now let me...
Let's bicker.
Let's start with General H.R. McMaster. I think this probably is going to be well received in Washington, especially amongst some of the people in the House and in the Senate who've been a little concerned about adults being in the room when it comes to national security.
Yeah, I think this was really... Exactly. That's the kind of person that they wanted after hearing about Howard, walking away from this opportunity because of his concerns about centralized control, either through Bannon or, others that not being able to bring in his own staff. There was really a lot of concern about who would take this job. And McMaster sounds like someone, his reputation is, that he doesn't take anything from anybody. So he's not only extremely well qualified and ready to handle the job, but that he's not going to be undermined with a shadow NSC. And I think that's the most, next to credentials, the most serious concern is that this is not, this has to be run in the traditional sense, or we're going to end up with a very myopic, sort of centrally controlled policy where the grown-ups are not involved. And like Mattis and, Secretary Trent's not being able to bring their great influence to bear on these really, essential policies going forward. And people was very nervous that a vacuum was being created there.
Yeah, a couple things that are interesting about the resume here of the general. General McMaster's resume includes the anti-corruption. He was a director of an agency within the Pentagon that is an anti-corruption agency for the Army.
Yeah.
And I find that to be pretty interesting, given the fact that there are a lot of questions about, too much of a cozy relationship, not just with Russia, but just too much of a cozy relationship with business interests around the world and those kinds of things, and about how what kind of connection the president's family's businesses are going to have in terms of the military, in terms of military and security issues. And so I think I think it's going to put a lot of people at ease. And if H.R. McMaster, who's known as the iconoclast general, I don't know how you get that particular nickname, but he did. If he's willing to stand up and see something that he doesn't like and call it out, that makes me feel better.
Yeah, and that's what Republicans, I really have noticed that there was a real sort of break about 10 days ago, so sort of 2 weeks plus in since the inauguration, with a sort of a heightened concern. As you know, and we've talked about this, they're trying so hard to give him a honeymoon. Obamacare repeal and replace, tax reform are going nowhere. They're mired in incredible amounts of disagreement. There's no direction from the White House. He's going to having rallies, but he's not selling actual policies that they really want to get passed sooner in this Congress rather than later. And then against the backdrop of this is the fact that, no, he didn't sell his business. He still owns it. The funds are running it. They say there's no more international deals. That's dubious. They just opened a golf course in Dubai. People can obviously get to that company and to the president's self-interest through, subsidiaries that deal with domestic deal with Trump International, the Trump Organization. The backdrop, of course, of the Russia investigations, of which there, I believe, are seven. So they're going to continue on, Republicans who want so desperately to, with a Republican president, pass, this agenda they've been sitting on and waiting for, even though they actually, like I said, really don't have any consensus on health care right now or tax reform. But they so want to get going.
Well, they need to do that.
All these other things. Yeah. No, they
wouldn't you agree, A.B.?
Things just kind of go away, and they want to see the personnel around Trump. They want to see a more settled and more, adult group around him. After the travel ban,
I think a couple of things are happening here too. I mean, obviously at Real Clear Politics, where you work, I mean, this is one of the things about Real Clear Politics is you're constantly looking at polling information and trends. And the the president, I think, has found himself in an interesting, awkward footing here, because the regular Republicans who voted for him, or the people who were like anybody but Hillary group, and I would say that that's probably somewhere, you know, I mean, statistically, it's provable that it's somewhere around a third to a half of the people who voted for him. Not people that necessarily love Donald Trump. I mean, obviously, he's got those people, right? We saw them down in Melbourne, Florida over the weekend. But he's he also has people who are like, yeah, but I'm just kind of into this to get we want tax reform. We want a change to Obamacare. We want tighter borders, things like that, that are Republican ideals, if you will. And now he finds himself in a situation where he's done a lot of things, but he hasn't gotten that tax reform piece or the dereg a little bit for the coal industry. People are happy about that in the coal industry. But then there's some environmental people in the Republican Party even who are like, really? Is that what we really want to do? So there are a lot of questions. And then in the meantime, you know, he's in these bizarre Twitter rants about things. Apparently he said that Sweden was swallowed up by a fjord. He's got this whole circumstance now with the media, right? I mean, I think that even for people who like hate the media because it's sport to do that, or they don't trust the media, I think they get it when the president of the United States says the enemy is the enemy of the people is the media. They get, whoa, wait, no, he's just trying to, he doesn't like when people say bad things about him, and that makes that him less trustworthy.
Yeah, let's be conservative. You said it's a third to a half. Let's look at the reluctant Trump vote and be conservative, and let's say it's 25%.
Okay.
He got in with 46%. If he loses 10% and he's down to 30 or whatever, if he loses a quarter, you know, of that vote, Republicans who told exit pollsters they were scared of him and voted for him anyway, late breakers who didn't like Hillary or Trump broke for him, didn't think he was qualified, just wanted a conservative Supreme Court justice or whatever it was you were mentioning, right?
Right.
In the legislative lineup. And so those people are going to be the first to peel away, and that's the threat to losing the House. If you have districts where Republicans are represented there, but Hillary won them, if you have districts where Trump becomes, that are, forget the Trump districts, forget them. It's all about the swing districts. And in these midterm elections where presidents usually in their first term don't do well, they take a beating. So if you look at the devoted Trump voters, are they coming out in a midterm to vote for, like, Congressman Snodgrass? Probably not. They love Trump. They don't like Republicans. So where's your turnout operation there if Trump's unpopular? Then if you get, like, an energized left and the independents turn on him, that's really the concern right now, is the Republicans are looking and saying, he can have all these, you know, crap shows every day with presser conferences and all this crazy stuff, but if we don't get something across the finish line before August, we're running into a midterm campaign calendar, and that's really where they're going to lose their hides. And so that's what you're going to see. It's like McCain is the only, and Graham are the only ones criticizing him publicly, but I talk to these guys every week, and it's a lot of them feel the same way, and they're just trying to, you know, dodge reporters and go under those crazy
They don't want to. Right, they won't. Don't want to say it publicly. But there, what is interesting to me is I'm finding the same thing you are, AB. That they're willing to say it to us privately and not for attribution, and because I think they're trying to hold their own just in case they have to break publicly. I was always against him. I was never with him. Remember, AB, I told you that, right? So it's going to be
it's going to
be
January 22nd.
Right. I remember. I have it on tape. Wait, that's illegal. All right. So are we expecting? Do we expect that we're going to get the redo of the travel ban today?
Oh, I don't know if it's coming today, but it's coming soon. And they better have the ducks in a row. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Well, they've started to leak some of that. I think intentionally leak some of that out. It's pretty interesting that they didn't that the McMaster thing happened sort of like a lightning strike without a leak. So that tells you that they've scared a few people inside, like Kellyanne Conway. The Sweden thing, with all the stuff going on at NATO and in Europe. It's the, you know, the president does have a tendency to step on his own messaging. And he, you know, had a big rally on Saturday. Obviously, he feels really at home in front of those crowds and loves the adulation and all those things. But then he always has some sort of flourish that he goes down, a narrative flourish that he goes down, and he goes a step too far. The Swedes are now like, hey, wait, what are you, what? I mean, we have challenges, right? But I don't know what, you know, what are you talking about here? And
go
ahead.
I mean, I just think it's never, look, it is legitimately embarrassing to have other nations questioning the leader of the free world publicly, asking, sir, we don't understand what you're talking about. You also have this whole weekend of the backdrop of everyone's over in Europe trying to reassure, we've got, you know, General Jim Jones and Governor Kasich and John McCain giving these interviews from Munich, trying to say we're reassuring our allies and Pence is calming them down. And, you know, everyone's convincing them that we're going to hold fast with this alliance and we're going to be good to our friends and it's all going to be okay. He has this taxpayer-funded rally, which, again, presidents do. You know, Obama was out there right away selling the stimulus. I remember him doing these rallies, but they were about a piece of legislation. So he needs adulation, but he doesn't want to. He's not actually selling a piece of legislation. And he has this thing, and then he pops off about, you know, some Tucker segment on Fox, and he doesn't get his facts right, and he gets called out publicly. It's just so unnecessary. I mean, he could have taken a few minutes to actually finish watching Tucker's thing up close and said what was in the segment. You know, that there's a conclusion that there is more crime now as a result of increased immigration flow and whatever.
And what's interesting is if you take that, if you look at that, because now people have looked at it, because this was a documentarian telling a story about which his belief is, and the supposition of his documentary, his point of view is that there has been an increase in crime as a result of this immigration. But if you look at the crime statistics in Sweden, the most recent ones in 2012 to 2015, when you've had this increase of about 100,000, again, 100,000 immigrants in a country of 10 million. So that's 1%. That's a big number. You've got, there were 112 murders in 2015, 112 murders in the entire country, right?
Yeah.
That's a good weekend in Chicago.
Yeah.
7% increase in crime, and an actual decrease in violent crime. And where violent crime has increased is in anti-Islam crime has doubled between 2012 and 2015. And these are now, you can just, I know you're going to think, oh, it's fake news. Go look it up yourself. The increase in crime has been cyber crime.
All right.
In Sweden. That's where the increase has been. Now, you can make the argument that there are people, you know, because that's cybercrime is a big thing in the Middle East, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in West Africa and other places. So you do have people, you know, that go to these internet rooms and these, you know, boiler rooms and you know, perhaps that's happening. So you can look at that. And there's no, even the prime minister isn't saying, listen, we don't have problems. They do have, and there have been some, and including all the things that we were talking about. But to make it sound like everything's a disaster to Donald Trump, and Sweden is a very important ally. Important ally.
I know, but it's just so illustrative of why being fast and loose with the facts and statements, you know, in the heat of the moment at rallies or even in friendly interviews is just not. It's for the campaign, but it's not for the presidency. And so it's, you know, we hope this is the worst example we ever have of it.
Okay. From your lips to Donald Trump's ears.
Right?
Yep. AB, thank you very much.
I mean,
appreciate
it. It doesn't get worse.
Yeah, I know. I think we all agree. I mean, he's because, you know, like, I think that it's like sort of two for one over the last. I think he's increasingly catching some momentum in some positive things. Now, he's going to have to get health care done quickly here. It turns out that health care, whether he wanted to slow walk it or not, he said he didn't. But, you know, then he was saying maybe next year or whatever he told O'Reilly. There's no chance now for that. Humana popping out last week and saying they're not going to be part of the exchanges in 2018. That changes the whole game here. They're going to have to figure this out, and they're going to have to get...
Right. I mean, look, the only thing that I want to give Donald Trump credit for is that Republicans were about to just repeal it and then, you know, non-deal for a couple of years. And Trump was right to say, no, we have to do it simultaneously. The day you repeal it, if you don't have a replacement that day, that's the last thing you'll ever do on health care. Then it's over. You never get 218 votes in the House again. So... he's right. The shrewd and necessary move is a 1-2 move where you have a new package.
Yeah.
And they just can't come to consensus on that.
Right, because he wants things that are currently in the Obamacare package that the Republicans are like, no, we can't do that. And then if you actually leave people out on the sidelines or you cut Medicaid, That's going to be yeah. That's the big apparently Medicaid's a big argument right now. That's for another day, AB. I'm just trying to not go to war with Sweden right now. That's all I'm doing.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, AB.
I'm with you on that.
Thank you. I think we're all in agreement. Thank you, including the Swedes. All right, AB Stoddard, Real Clear Politics. Here is Violetta Pottermedic, Real Clear Traffic.